this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington.
We interrupt our program to bring you a special broadcast. The German news agency...
We interrupt this program to bring you a news bulletin from Washington. The White House has just announced...
Here is a news bulletin. Shots have reportedly been fired.
Here's another late development, and this news keeps coming in.
This is an NBC News hotline report.
Special report. Verdict sparks violence. National emergency.
Secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Can your heart stand the shocking facts of the true story of Joshua P. Warren?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight regarding the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual, and we don't just discuss it. We go in the field to investigate. Here's a story from right here in the good old U.S. of A., reported by New Scientist magazine. Of course, we do have the most powerful military in the world here with a virtually unlimited amount of money and resources to put into new weapons. So it's always interesting when we learn about a new one. And this one is, it's pretty interesting. Apparently, the Pentagon has released that they have created an ICBM. They basically might consider the stink bomb from hell. Imagine being hit by a smell worse than anything you've ever encountered. This combines the reek of sewage with pungent, rotting meat. It's nauseating, so intense that you literally drop your guns and run. And apparently there has been some controversy over this. The use of chemical agents in war is banned under the International Chemical Weapons Convention, CWC. Even compounds often used by police, such as tear gas, are prohibited in war. But the Department of Defense thinks that it's found a loophole, and so they now think these super-powered stink bombs are going to be perfectly appropriate for the U.S. military arsenal. They don't cause injury, but they say you can't even think when you smell this. It overwhelms your senses, and you just flee. So maybe that's the future of non-lethal weaponry after all. Hey, thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, author of books like Haunted Asheville, How to Hunt Ghosts, and The Secret Wisdom of Kukulkan. I'm founder and president of Lemur Paranormal Investigations. My producer and engineer tonight is Mr. Hardwood Forrest Connor. Good evening, Forrest.
Good evening, Joshua. How are you enjoying this beautiful weather we've been having here lately?
I love it. You know, I talk often about how nice it is to go to the islands, go to the Caribbean, get away. But if the weather were like this year-round here in western North Carolina, I wouldn't be in such a rush to head on vacation all the time.
Oh, yeah, and you know, we had a monumental event at our house last week.
Oh, yeah?
We picked our first tomato off the plants we grew this week.
Good for you. Now, what a feeling to know that you can sustain yourself and you know, to a certain extent, what has gone into creating this tomato.
Right.
Was it
Did it taste better than what you'd get at the store?
It tasted beautiful.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. It was the taste of success.
Taste of success, and just put it on a biscuit, and you're good to go.
You and I both are fans of the good Southern Mater biscuit.
Yes, sir.
A big, fluffy biscuit. Slice it open. I like to spread a little mayo inside. You're probably not the mayo variety.
No. Just a purist, straight mayo. Maybe a little butter on the biscuit.
Yeah, butter never hurts. A little salt. It's like a little cloud. It's like a piece of heaven that your teeth just sink right into. Well, somebody else who might be able to appreciate good Southern homegrown cooking, Investigator Shelley Wright. You're a native of Western North Carolina.
Yes.
Do you like Mater biscuits?
I like Mater biscuits.
Do you?
Okay. I do, but I also like them smothered with butter and jelly.
Oh, well, I always thought the jelly kind of like killed the taste of the tomato a little bit.
Well, I don't want a tomato and butter and, you know, jelly on there all at the same time.
Right. You're talking variations.
Just a variation.
Like, here's a jam biscuit, here's a butter biscuit, here's a Mater biscuit, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
You should start selling those at Wright's Coin Shop.
I should do that.
Yeah.
You know, Forrest was talking about his tomato and how perfect it was and how wonderful it tasted. I don't have a garden, unfortunately, so I went to the tailgate market with a friend of mine, and we decided the best way to get through it was to eat our way through it. It was so much fun. Oh, yeah.
Well, you see, Forrest is going to survive now through 2012. You're going to starve.
That's not true.
What are you going to eat, coins? You're going to start just...
I will trade some coins.
You'll trade your coins for Forrest Maters. Is that how it's going to work?
And I'll be rich.
And I'll be well-fed.
Well, you know, we have a very special show tonight. This is the first show of summer of 2012. 2012 is a big year for all the different reasons we've talked about for years in the past. And tonight is going to be part three, wrapping up the trip to Romania and some experiences that I had in London. And we're going to take care of all that the first hour. Because second hour of the show tonight, I have a special guest. And I don't have a lot of guests anymore, only if I think it might be somebody who's really interesting. This man is a reverend who lives here in Asheville, North Carolina, and he says he has met the extraterrestrials in person, and he has an important message for all of you tonight. His name is Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. Now, I have not spoken to him before, but I think he's going to share something very interesting with us all tonight on this program. A Southern reverend who has seen the aliens. How does that sound? Pretty interesting?
Sounds fun.
Yeah. So, and of course, as usual, we'll have the Dark 30 Hour when we dig into the more controversial, outrageous, bizarre news that either you don't hear in the mainstream or you don't hear it quite fleshed out with the proper degree of opinion attached to it, at least in our opinions. But we've gotten a lot of feedback about last week's program. In fact, people have been emailing from all over the country saying how much they have enjoyed the past two shows when we have discussed in sometimes excruciating and laborious detail the huge trip that we took, the trip of a lifetime investigating Transylvania. And it's about time to wrap this up. But last week, we sort of ended with the town of Sigishwara after we had a big crazy party one night, and you, Shelley, went back to your hotel room, and you were staying with Patricia, and right when you guys were about to hit the sack, this ghostly, apparitional, spiritual form began to sort of attack you.
Right. She had already gone to sleep. She wasn't feeling very well, and then, so she was already asleep. I was climbing into bed, had just covered myself up, and this thing came down at me. It came down from the ceiling to try and cover me.
So, you know, we won't rehash all of that, because don't forget, folks, if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you can find a link there to our podcast. Now, there is a difference in our podcast in the past. Some of our podcasts up until, I think maybe like, was it November of last year or something like
that? It was.
Okay, up until November. Those are podcasts which are hosted, some of them are.
October.
Was it okay?
It was October 31st.
So, you know, in the range of, you know, a little over half a year ago, you'll find some of the older podcasts at WWNC.com. We don't know how long they are going to be there. If you want to listen to basically anything that is aired in the past 6 months, you have to go to our new podcasting setup. You go to speakingofstrange.com. There is a link right there at the top that says podcast. You click it, and you can download them as MP3s. Now, we are still working on trying to get, like, iTunes and some of these other subscriber services to carry these podcasts for automatic update. But there are a lot of technical and creative issues that we're trying to iron out in order to be able to do that. So your best bet is just to go to speakingofstrange.com. It doesn't cost you a penny. You don't have to sign up for anything. You don't have to log in. You can download the MP3s. And also during the program at speakingofstrange.com, you'll find a live chat during the show, more information on topics discussed, links to some of the things that we consider staples, like the Haunted Asheville Ghost Tours created by me, of course, the Asheville Mystery Museum. You would not believe how many people are visiting the museum and taking the tours now. It's nuts because the weather's so nice and it's that time of year. HauntedAsheville.com gives you the information there. Don't be fooled by imposters. Go to HauntedAsheville.com. So getting back to the Romania thing before we go to our first break, after Sighi Swara, we went to the town of Senai, where we visited this huge grand palace, and it was a royal palace in Romania. You had to put little slippers over your shoes.
You know, there was something funny, a place that you have to put slippers over your shoes, but you have to bring your own toilet paper.
Yeah, that is funny. And yeah, you go in there, you put little slippers over your shoes so that you wouldn't, I don't know, scuff up the floor, I guess.
Don't have to do that at Biltmore Estate.
Yeah. You also had to do something there you do at a lot of these places in Romania. You had to pay extra if you wanted to take pictures or shoot video. And I always paid to do those things. So I've got a nice collection of video and pictures, and at some point I'm going to create a public event when we can get together and people who are interested can watch some of that stuff. But the next day, which was our final day for most of us, some stayed on an extra day, like Shelley, and she'll tell you about that. But the next day, which was my final day, before I left, we went to the island of Snagov. And this is an island monastery which is honored as the burial site of the real Dracula. When we come back, we'll tell you what it's like to cross over to this strange, little, enigmatic, foggy island and see how they honor Vlad the Impaler. And then I'll tell you about my trip to London. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the program where the unusual becomes usual, where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the downright weird. Keeping you company tonight, it's called Speaking of Strange. And we'll be right back after this. middle of Romania is a small, foggy, mysterious little island. It's called Snagov. And it is the home of the monastery. For hundreds of years past, the only way to access the small island of Snagov was by a tiny boat. You would have to pay a coin to Charon, and he would paddle you through the dark, murky waters over to the island of Snagov. When you finally get there, it's a very peaceful, quiet place. There are ponies kicking about. And when you walk into the small monastery there, especially on a Sunday, you will hear this ancient singing in the back. It's a minister of some sort who honors the grave of Vlad Dracul. You see, after Dracula was executed, supposedly his head was chopped off, and it was put into a barrel of honey for preservation. And that head was sent to, I believe it was the King of Hungary, if I'm not mistaken, because there had been a charge that Vlad was going to try to overthrow Hungary, which they claim was not true anyway. The story goes that Vlad's body was buried there in this monastery. I suppose his headless body. Who knows what happened to the head? And so people who consider Vlad Dracul a hero, as opposed to some sort of, you know, monstrous vampire, as much of the world does, they would go there to this sacred place to honor his body. But you know what happened in the 1930s? There were some archaeologists and anthropologists who decided that they wanted to break his grave open and you know, look at his body, study it. And I always think that's a wonderful idea. A lot of people don't like the idea of doing that sort of thing. I'm always pro-grave robbing, you know, just break it open, take out the pieces, let's have some fun here. So they opened the grave up in the 1930s, and guess what they found? It was empty. For hundreds of years, this is the place that had been honored as the gravesite of Vlad. To this day, nobody can explain why that grave is empty. And it adds a lot to the vampire legend. But even though there is no body there, well, they weren't going to change their ways, because ultimately honoring the dead is about honoring the spirit anyway. And so, to this day, there is still a gravesite inside this monastery with a picture of Vlad. And you walk in, and it's a very quiet, holy environment, and there's, like I say, kind of a strange minister, and he's behind a curtain. And once every 5 minutes or so, he'll pull the curtain open, and he'll peek out, and he'll say, or whatever, something like that. And then he'll close it back real fast, before you can even get a picture of him. You're like, ah, I was going to take a picture of that guy. He's good at it, though, hiding himself in a flash. And then there are a couple of guys who are also standing out in the middle of this thing, and they're singing back to him. Right? And so this is happening back and forth. These guys are singing to each other. But when the guy pops out from behind the curtain, it's like pop goes the weasel, you know, and then boom, he's gone. So this guy appears and reappears, but these other two guys are singing. It's a very odd situation, isn't it, Shelley?
Yes, it is.
At least for us heathen Americans.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. It was strange.
It was. It was eerily beautiful, yes. And so everybody was taking their pictures there around, you know, the burial site there. And after that, some of us had to leave Romania, which was kind of a sad affair. I was one of those people because I had made arrangements to go on to London. But you, in about, I don't know, maybe 15 other people, Shelley, stayed an extra day, right?
We did.
And for those of you who are going to stay an extra day, you got to go that night to what they called in Bucharest the Dracula Dinner.
Yes.
Now, what was that?
The Dracula dinner was really good. It was a dinner in with flames, chicken, potatoes. It was wonderful. But you're in this building that looks like a haunted attraction. You know, it's set up to look like Dracula's castle, and you have all sorts of fun little things hanging on the wall, and it's dark and dungeon-like, and you also have TV screens set up that show clips of the old Dracula movies. And it's usually closed, I believe, on Sundays, but they opened just for us. The owner served us, and Dracula showed up. Dracula was a lot of fun.
This is the guy who gave you a hickey.
Yes, yes.
And you're proud of that.
Well, you know, I didn't think he'd use his real teeth. He was fun. He was great. We danced, and then he sank his teeth into me.
Do you still have marks?
No, but I did the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Sounds like he has a pretty good job.
I believe he does. I was not the only one he bit.
I figured, yeah, he just, you know, all night long, he just sucks on women's necks and gets paid for it.
Mm-hmm. Sucked on Patty's neck. Well, he bit her. She was not quite as amused by it as I was, but we had so much fun.
Well, so you might come back from Transylvania with vampirism or...
How many people can say?
You know,
I went to Transylvania and Dracula gave me a hickey.
Well, you know, as I mentioned, this experience going to Romania and Transylvania was so fantastic. It's really not over because, you know, we're back, but there was so much to be processed. I have a new display I'm going to be putting at my Asheville Mystery Museum later this year about Transylvania. And the experience there. I've got some really neat stuff and a lot of surprises in store, actually, that are related to what we learned in Transylvania. But people already are kicking themselves because they didn't go on this trip. Well, next year, Dave Schrader is taking a group back, and I, unfortunately, don't think I can be a part of it because I have some TV obligations, scheduling problems. But Dave will be co-hosting it with Jeff Belanger, who is a good friend of mine. I consider Jeff to be like the Groucho Marx of the paranormal. He's the funniest, wittiest guy, extremely intelligent. Everybody loves Jeff Belanger. So Dave Schrader and Jeff Belanger, that's an awesome duo. And if you're interested in going next year, just email Dave Schrader, dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com. Just tell him, hey, keep me informed. If, however, you are interested in going a little sooner than that, Christian, who owns Go Romania Tours, this is the man you want to arrange any experience in Romania. And I don't have to tell you this, and I'm only telling you this because it's that good. GoRomaniaTours.com, and, you know, they came up with a little program for our trip here, Shelley.
They did.
I've got it in my hand. We didn't expect this. This was a nice program that shows all the places that we visited and has background. And on the back is an ad that says Halloween Dracula Tour 2012. So they are doing a Halloween costume party and all kinds of fun stuff in Hunedoara Castle. At the castle where the stones were thrown at us and everything hit the fan.
Mm-hmm.
We had the feast. They're doing Halloween there. So if you're interested in any of that stuff, Christian@GoRomaniaTours.com or just Go Romania Tours, or if you have any trouble getting in touch with them, email me. I'll forward it on. But we can't thank those guys enough. Christian, Radu, Aline, you guys were the best, and thank you for making this an experience of a lifetime. Right, Shelley?
Right.
Unfortunately, we must move on. I could just talk about Transylvania every night on this show from now on. But three shows, we have to move on, because I left Romania for London. And I was only able to stay a few days in London. But I'd never been there before. And I decided I wanted to do the Tower of London. You got to do the Tower of London did the Jack the Ripper walk. And I'll tell you a few interesting things about that experience. One thing I'll tell you is that I stayed very close, within walking distance, to the Tower of London, Tower Bridge, London Bridge, the most beautiful little scenic part of old London there. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll tell you what my experience was like and what you could actually, you know, expect if you just go in there as an American and you're walking around looking at these things you've heard about your entire life. Torture devices, crown jewels, all that kind of stuff. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. It's Speaking of Strange. I am Joshua P. Warren telling you this first hour of the program about, wrapping up Romania when Lauren and I went to London. And by the way, this show is brought to you in large part by the Sunshine Simple Solar Generator for the home. And let me tell you something. I'm just going to announce this right now for the first time. We are proud to say we have now just created the Sunshine Simple Junior. Yes, Sunshine Simple Junior. And you see, the original Sunshine Simple is good for powering a bunch of the stuff in your house, but and it weighs less than 100 pounds. Sunshine Simple Junior weighs less than 50 pounds, so it's less than half the weight of the original MP Surge. This is for people who either can't afford the original system or want something that's even smaller and lighter, $895. So it's that we just created this thing and we don't even have it listed on our website yet, but go to sunshinesimple.com if you want to learn about the Sunshine Simple system. And then if you, would like a Sunshine Simple Junior, email us and we'll tell you how to get one. So, Lauren and I left Romania, and we went to London for a few days. And we only had really one good full day there, if you consider, you know, all the hullabaloo of getting in and then getting out. That eats up, you know, about a day. So anyway, I'm going to be very honest with you. That's what I do on this program. I'm Mr. Honest with you. And I know there is this sense that London is this big, gorgeous, romantic city, but altogether, it was not as romantic and gorgeous and scenic as I would imagine. A lot of London was very filthy. I was kind of surprised by how dirty a lot of London was, and a lot of London looked kind of run down. Now, obviously, the Olympics are coming up, and so I think a lot of money is being spent into cleaning it up and restoring things. But I was kind of surprised that a lot of it had that just kind of big city feel to it. I shouldn't say that. I mean, that's naive to say that, you know, obviously London's going to be a big city. But, I mean, it's not like that everything you're looking at is some beautiful architectural marvel. Now, there were some really neat things, you know, old stuff that was preserved incredibly well. But I actually enjoyed my experience in Romania better than I did my experience in London. And Lauren felt the same way. That said, so we once we got in London, we decided, of course, just to go that very first night, since we were so close by, to the Tower of London, and just look at the outside of it. And then right next to that is Tower Bridge and London Bridge. And when you see these pictures or footage of London, and you see this big, like, incredible, gorgeous bridge with these spires and stuff, that's actually Tower Bridge. A lot of people might assume that's London Bridge. London Bridge is a very simple-looking bridge, actually, that runs right down the River Thames a little bit across. And we got there on a Sunday, so basically all the bars and restaurants and stuff were closed really, really early. We didn't have a lot of options. But the next day, we had a good time. One of the things you have to do in London is go have some fish and chips on the River Thames. And so we found a nice little place there, right next to, the Tower of London. We had fish and chips. My favorite beer there, it's called London Pride, their big award-winning beer. And when you go into a bar for us, they have this big pump that they use, like a pump tap, to pump the beer out manually. And it's weird because if they put a new keg in, I mean, a guy will stand there for 5 minutes just pumping the foam off. Yeah.
Just priming it, boom, I guess.
Boom, yeah. But when it finally comes out, I mean, it's a good, rich, tasty beer, but it's slightly cool, you know. It's just a little above room temperature, not like we're used to in the States, where it's nice and frosty and cold. You hear about how they don't serve, you know, things
right
as cold, and it's true. Ice is pretty uncommon and that sort of thing. You know, obviously you wouldn't put that in a beer, but another thing that is very popular in London is called Pimm's. You ever heard of Pimm's?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, supposedly, like, back in the 1800s, some Englishmen who owned a bar decided that gin, which is a very English liquor, needed to get a little oomph. And so he mixed some special, like, herbs and spices and juices and I don't know. And he created Kentucky Fried Gin. And so he came up with this thing that, have you ever had what we would call hooch, Shelley? It's like a fruit-injected moonshine.
No, I have not.
No?
Okay. Believe it or not.
I know you have, Forrest.
Never. I've never touched the stuff.
Imagine kind of like a fruit-injected gin, and people mix that with, you know, either club soda or various seltzers and things, and create a nice, like, perfect summery drink. It's almost like a mojito combined with a daiquiri, or I don't know. So we sat there, we had fish and chips, we had a London Pride, we had a Pimm's, a perfect, beautiful, sunny day. We were told the weather was just exceptional. So we ended up going over to the Tower of London. And the Tower of London, it looks like a huge, big block of old rooks from the chess game. You think the Tower of London's like a big soaring tower, but no. It's a block of rooks from chess. And you walk inside, and it's a big tourist attraction. It's large, of course. And you see weird things in there you weren't expecting. Like, you're expecting to go through moats and into little dungeons. I mean, you know you're going to do all that. But they had elephants and baboons and lions and tigers and all these things sculpted as wire sculptures just sitting around there, because apparently the Tower of London used to be the zoo, kind of. That, you know, there came a point when one of the royal figures decided, hey, the people of London need to see exotic animals. So they invited elephants and baboons and all these things to live, to run around the Tower of London. And once in a while, they'd open the doors and the public could come in and see all these things and leave. So that was kind of weird. So anyway, you're walking through areas where they, you know, they have the torture devices there, like they've got the rack. They have this thing I'd never seen before that would, like, it would basically, you'd have to bend over and practically kiss your own behind, and then they just, they would put some metal bands around you and screw you into this position. It's kind of the opposite of the rack. You know, the rack is to stretch you out. This thing squeezes you up into a little ball. And, you know, they have the chopping blocks and the executioner blocks and, you know, all the stuff that you would expect. You go through an area where they have all of these knights' outfits, knights' armor standing there. And the one that stands out the most, if you subscribe to my Twitter feed, which you can find through joshuapwarren.com, I actually put a picture of this. Henry VIII has his armor. Henry VIII's armor is standing there in the middle of the Tower of London. And the crotch on this thing is just magnificent. I mean, it. If you're looking at it from a profile, there, I guess you call that a cod piece or something.
Yeah.
It sticks out. I mean, it's got to jut out, come on, like it, maybe a foot, you know, at least 8 inches. I mean, it's just really, really pronounced.
Compensating for something?
Yeah. And, you know, he was the one who was killing all his wives. So this guy has some kind of sexual issue going on, in my opinion. I mean, if a guy stepped out to fight me and he had that on, I'd laugh. I don't know what, it would just totally throw me off. My game would be totally destroyed at this point. But going to see the crown jewels was pretty darn interesting because right in the dead center, you go into this area, you know, and this is the big place where everybody wants to go see the magnificence of the crown. And so you're walking through these hallways, and there are trumpets blowing, and they're really building you up all dramatically. There are big quotes on the walls saying, this represents the majesty and the power of England. And you finally get to the middle where the crown jewels are positioned in a room next to like a conveyor belt, like a moving sidewalk, and a dimly lit room with all these bright lights on them. So you stand on this conveyor belt, and slowly it takes you by the crown jewels. So you pass like these diamonds that are the size of grapefruits and these golden scepters and, you know, all this amazing stuff. The punch bowl, they call it the grand punch bowl, which is like a bathtub made of solid gold, as ornate as you can imagine. They claim that it took 6 guys to carry it empty. So you're looking at all, you know, you look at one of these pieces and you're like, man, this is worth more than I will ever have in my entire life. And then, finally, you're on your way out the door, and you look over, and guess what you see there? A donation box. I kid you not. As you walk out of the room where the crown jewels are stored, there is a donation box on the right. Now, their explanation is, oh, we're independent, and we need funding because we get no resources at all from the royal family. That's not my problem. I paid $30 to get in here. You want more after I've just looked at the crown jewels? When we come back from this break, I'll wrap this up, this hour up, telling you about the Jack the Ripper walk and how I learned what a merkin is. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
You buy 100 pounds of yeast and a copper line.
How can you not walk through the streets of London as a 30-something American? and not fancy yourself Bond, James Bond. That was one cool thing about being in London. James Bond, James Bond. That's how Sean Connery says it. Bond, James Bond. Yeah, I just got back from London. We're in the final minutes of hour number one on tonight's show. Have a special guest coming up next hour. A reverend who has met the aliens. The extraterrestrials. So, when I was in London, one thing I had to do, of course, was take the Jack the Ripper walk. That was a little bit spooky. In fact, you know, you get on these narrow cobblestone alleyways. And one thing that surprised me was just how small the area was in which he killed all of his victims. It was more or less sort of like one street. I mean, a lot of people seem to know that, but I mean, it's not as nearly as spread out as you would think. And of course, it happened late at night. And back then, they used so much coal that they claimed you couldn't see your hand in front of your face at night. It was so dark, so black out there. You can see why he got away with all of it. We went down this one alleyway, and there was actually a person just lying there, bundled up in the alleyway. Could have been dead. I don't know. We just walked on by. It's creepy. Some of these alleyways are so narrow that I can pretty much reach out and touch both of the walls. I mean, that weird to be walking through these crevices that were just streets. There was one street in particular that Charles Dickens wrote about in Oliver Twist. One of these were Oliver Twist and Fagin or somebody would go down the streets. And I learned on this walk what a merkin is. You know what a merkin is?
I don't know what a merkin is.
Just ask George W. Bush. I'm a merkin, you're a merkin. I'm the merkin president.
Merkin?
You know what a merkin is, Horace.
I do.
Well, let me describe it. Because I'm not sure how you'll describe it.
It's a cover.
Apparently, yes. One of the reasons that, of course, you know, obviously the women who were killed by Jack the Ripper were prostitutes. And they lived a very, very tough life. And it was common for them to get venereal diseases. And they didn't have a lot of medical technology, so to help cure this, they felt if they drank mercury, that would help cure these diseases. Now, of course, we know it's a bad thing to take mercury. When you take mercury, it makes your hair fall out. So these women who were taking mercury did not want their clients to know that they had a venereal disease. But it would be obvious if all of their feminine hair was gone. So they would make little toupees for themselves that they would put in their intimate areas so that men would not know that they had VD. And I'm not sure how this came up on the Jack the Ripper tour exactly, but it did. So that's something that you know about now, thanks to my trip to London. I also went to Ten Bells, which is one of the bars where one of the women, one of the prostitutes, was drinking right before she went out and was murdered by Jack the Ripper. And that bar is virtually unchanged to this day. It's pretty wild to go in there and sit down and, you know, have a beer and imagine, you know, what it was like that night. Who knows the things that have happened there. But it was, you know, it was a very cool experience. I mean, that for me was just as fun as anything else in London, you know, just taking that walk because I love history. I love imagining these things. I will tell you one thing before we have to take our break. I'll get to this real quick. Most of the people on our trips were very, very friendly everywhere we went. And at one point, Lauren and I went into a little hookah bar in London. And we were sitting outside, we were smoking a nice tobacco and drinking mint tea, and there was this old man, sort of an old Middle Eastern man, who owned the place. And anyway, it came time to leave, and I went inside, and I found him downstairs behind a bar, and I said, we've had an excellent time here, but we have a plane to catch, and we kind of need to get going. So the old man said, where are you going? And I said, well, I'm from North Carolina. And he said, you're American? I said, yeah. The old man stopped what he was doing. He walked around the bar. He came up to me. He shook my hand. And he looked me right in the eye. And he said, I want to thank you for what you did in Iraq. And I was like, you know, I was pretty shocked. And he said, a lot of people think the opposite, that life there was so terrible before, and it's so much better now. Thank you so much. And I told him, I said, well, there were a lot of brave men and women who gave their lives in Iraq, and I will pass your gratitude along to them. Well, this guy had no idea that I was a radio host, so this is my way of passing that man's gratitude along to all of you who were involved in that situation. I have never been in the military, but there is a man in London who has asked me to thank all of you for what you did there, and that's pretty profound. And it also shows you what an ambassador you are for your country when you travel abroad. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, hour number two, we have a reverend from Asheville who has met the extraterrestrials. He has something to tell all of us. Wonder what it is. We'll see. You're listening to the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Don't touch that dial.